perception isn't always reality, and don't believe everything everybody else tells you. Because when they tell you, oh, this is fantastic, this is great, this is, guaranteed you, as long as my ass points to the ground, they've had those roller coasters and they will tomorrow. Because it's just how it works. There's no one out there that's had smooth run and everything's rosy and life's great. Nah, doesn't work like that.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Dichotomy Podcast. This is a show dedicated to exploring the dichotomies we experience in business and in life. My name's Mike Reed, and I'm a guy who's incredibly fascinated by understanding why we make the decisions we do in life, and ultimately, how do we lead a good life? As a business owner, I get the pressures of managing business, family, money, health, can create great inner conflicts around what we actually want out of our business and our lives. This podcast is dedicated to exploring just that. I hope you enjoy it. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, my dichotomy-loving listeners. Welcome to another episode of the Dichotomy Podcast. My name's Mike Reed, and thank you for tuning in to this episode with my good friend, Darren Finkelstein. Now, Darren and I met many, many years ago in Melbourne, Australia. He, at the time, was running a very successful boat sales business, but he was feeling a bit jaded, a little bit burnt out, and things were starting to flatline. He ended up coming into the Key Person of Influence Accelerator program that we run at Dent, and his business kind of went on a bit of a different trajectory thereafter, and Darren's gone through some really phenomenal growth in business and life. But what I got to learn on this episode was that his journey with St Kilda Boat Sales, his boat sales business in Melbourne, is really just one small chapter of Darren's life. And this man has experienced a lot in his entrepreneur journey, and he's experienced a lot of challenges and a lot of highs and a lot of lows. And so we get into this in the episode. We talk about some of the dichotomies that he's faced along that journey. You know, Darren went from running a successful business many, many years ago, selling computer parts, to getting down to his last $500 after having lost everything due to a range of different circumstances, all with a six-month-year-old, his son. And so we talk about that journey, moving through that, transitioning through that, what that was like. Darren then went on to spend 10 years working his way up the ranks of Apple to ultimately become the manager of commercial markets for Apple under the leadership of Steve Jobs. Darren would fly from Australia to Cupertino on a regular basis to spend time with all sorts of icons of Apple, from Johnny Ive to Steve Jobs. And that was a pretty amazing journey and experience. And we talk about what his experience was like at Apple, where he just constantly felt like the treadmill of volumes and commitments and responsibilities and pressures just kept getting turned up and up and up. And he just had to keep running and running. We talk about the dichotomies that he experienced around that before he faced a bit of a fork in the road and had to take a different path. That led him to start his boat sales business, St Kilda Boat Sales, which he later exited for a very handsome sum. It was a very successful seven-figure revenue business. And while that was great, Darren went through a period of transition after exiting his business, which was tough. And I think many entrepreneurs face that in their journey. You know, it's one of the dichotomies that if they do sell their business, that can create a bit of a void. And so we talk about what that was like. So much gold in this episode. Darren is a font of wisdom in how to lead a good life and how to build extraordinary business, family life. And so I think you're just going to love this episode. Now, one thing to keep in mind with this recording is we were experiencing some audio issues for about the first 20 minutes. So we did have to do this recording in two parts. You'll hear a little bit of crackling from a headphone issue. We resolved it after 20 minutes, but if you can just persevere for that first 20, that's what that sound is. The content of what Darren has to share, though, is gold. So you want to stick through it. I, you know, really admire and have a lot of respect for Darren. So please enjoy this episode of the Dichotomy Podcast with Darren Finkelstein. Okay, I think it's worth mentioning before we get into the show, what is a dichotomy? Well, the dictionary defines a dichotomy as a division between two things that are opposed or feel opposed. So think of it as something in your life where you're feeling torn or conflicted. Maybe it's two opposing ideologies you have about life. Maybe it's something about your marriage or your business. Maybe it's the angel and the devil on the shoulder. Whatever it is, you're struggling to find balance and contentment with this dichotomy existing in your business or life. Now, all my conversations with my guests are pretty wide-ranging. We talk about business, philosophy, psychology, health, wealth, emotions. My goal is to tease out what are the parts of themselves or their life where they feel torn, afflicted, or uncertain. If they felt that way in the past, what did they learn in navigating that tension? If they're experiencing that right now, what are they discovering? As we unpack these concepts in the show, I hope you find some or all of them relevant for your own life and can apply the learnings as well. Mr. Darren Finkelstein, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mr. Michael Reed. Hello, mate. Nice to be on your show.
Mate, it is so good to catch up with you over a podcast conversation. I think we're well overdue. For some time, we've been talking about doing a Skype beer.
And we have.
It's pretty early in the morning where you are. So I don't know if you've got a beer in hand. You probably got a coffee in hand. I'm getting a little bit more boring in my old age. I've got a cup of tea. It's about 8:30 at night here.
But
we're going to have a great conversation either way.
I look forward to it. I do have coffee here. It is too early in the morning for a beer. Although somewhere in the world it is after 5 o'clock and you're in that place.
That's it. I mean, if this conversation goes really well, you could get a little nip of whiskey and just chuck it in coffee and that's a great start to the day. Podcast and a little whiskey.
And a little whiskey. Perfect.
So, Darren, before we kind of kicked off the show, I gave the audience plenty of context around you and I and how we met and all your background and your experience and how awesome you are. So I thought it might be a good place to start by going back to a little bit more of the origin story of Darren Finkelstein. And I'd love to ask you, if you cast your mind back to when you were a young boy, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Good question. I wanted to be a travel agent when I was at school, coming to sort of the end of my high school, and high school for me finished in Form 5 in my day, year 11. I didn't make it to the VCE year 12 year, and I repeated Form 4 because I love school so much. I thought chucking an extra year in there was a good idea. Not. That's my excuse anyway. And I wanted to be a travel agent, and my schooling, my teachers called myself and my parents into the office at the school and said, look, there's no future for Darren here at school. He needs to go and get a job. He's just not going to be anything in his life. You know, he couldn't be bothered and he just wants to muck around and is very social. I love that. Very social and therefore didn't have the scholastic capability. So he needs to go and find a trade is what they suggested. And I went, bugger that. I want to be a travel agent. And kind of started from there, even though I've never been a travel agent in my entire life.
So, you know, for me, that's so fascinating, given what I know about you and I think what the audience is going to learn as we go. But reflecting back on that now, what was it about being a travel agent that really kind of got your juices flowing?
Well, it's interesting. Nothing really, because I did a travel project in school. I had to create a travel brochure, which I got a really good mark for. The only time I got an A in geography was doing that travel brochure project. Now, I don't know whether that was more of a marketing thing or anything else that I you know, in the early days I touched on. Perhaps my creativity came out in that. But that's kind of why I thought I wanted to be a travel agent. I'd never traveled. In this point, my family were not travelers that would book a travel agent. You know, we did lots of family holidays as a kid, but we never went overseas. So we never sort of planned anything. It was always, you know, we're going to go to Sydney or we're going to go to the Gold Coast. And we would just be creatures of habit going back to the same place, staying at the same accommodation. So there was nothing about a travel agent that I knew about, yet I wanted to be one. Don't ask me how all that works.
Yeah, because, you know, it's one of the questions that I love to ask, and often, you know, maybe there's a bit of a theme or a connection that we don't often appreciate from, you know, the thing we wanted to be as a child versus, you know, to what we do today? Because often they're very different, right? You know, it's rarely does the kid who wants to be an astronaut end up becoming an astronaut. But there were some themes or elements about why they wanted to be an astronaut that maybe have sort of shown up in their life in some kind of way. And, you know, maybe I should ask you to sort of unpack this a little bit more. But, you know, in your last business, St Kilda Boat Sales, you sold boats, but, you know, what would you say you were really in the business of?
I was in the business of connecting people, bringing typically families together and, you know, getting dads to spend quality time with the kids because, you know, dads is you know, always on the phone and not present. Having, you know, mums and the partners involved with boating because as a parent, you can be a team manager of the kids' netball team or the footy team, but all you are is on the sidelines. You're actually not participating. Yet boating gave you the ability to participate. So the partner could be the skipper of the boat. It didn't have to be the bloke all the time and vice versa. And, you know, everybody can have an active, equal role in it. And so it was really about connecting people, teaching the kids great life skills, great lessons in that they can carry forward in their entire lives, like, you know, responsibility and understanding the weather and planning. I mean, such important elements. And lastly, you know, getting blokes and the ladies together and letting them spend quality time with their mates, talking stuff. And we know that talking is a really good component of mental health these days. We need to talk about our stuff more and more.
We do. This is, to be honest, this is one of the reasons why I did a podcast, because it just gives me a great opportunity to, a good excuse to sit down with friends and interesting people and talk about life and business and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. And, you know, it's interesting, right? Because for me, a lot of the things that you just shared then, I don't know whether or not you see it this way, but it could probably be a bit of connection between, you know, wanting to connect people, the adventure of going out in the water and all those kind of things, and, you know, kind of what you would have delivered as a travel agent, which is, you know, people going away, getting out to the great outdoors, adventure, connection.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've actually never looked at it like that, but there is absolutely similarities between the two. And maybe I was onto something when I was back in, you know, year 10 at school, doing my little travel agency, my travel brochure, but I wasn't quite there yet. And it took me a bloody long time to get there.
Yeah. And I think often, you know, when we look back in our lives, we don't stop and try and connect the dots. But when you connect the dots, often there's a theme. There's always a theme to people's lives, I believe, you know. And, you know, connecting the dots of that can be just super powerful for figuring out where to next.
We live in a world that doesn't necessarily support your ability to connect those dots. And a lot of people don't have the realization that they actually should be connecting those dots or want to go through that exercise to learn more about themselves, because they're always, you know, not looking within. They're always looking at what's ahead or what's on the other side of the river that looks better than the side of the river that they're currently on.
And I don't think we often get a chance just to stop and reflect, because we're, you know, bombarded by constant, you know, messages, social media, constant input of information and data. And it's just like life has gotten so busy and so fast.
Yeah, sure has.
Hey, Darren, tell us a bit more about your entrepreneur journey. Like, where did it all begin for you? And maybe I'd just love if you could take a few minutes just to sort of share whatever's meaningful to you around your entrepreneur journey, the arc of that experience and sort of how it's been unfolding from your perspective.
Yeah, kind of go back to and sort of look at the last 25, nearly 30 years now. My real journey started when I saw the need back in, I can't even think of the year it was, early 80s, saw the need for a constant and regular supply of computer-related accessories. And I formed a business that was all about selling computer supplies. And in the old days of dot matrix printers and you know, computer paper, which was, as you know, continuous. You remember the A3 sheets that were continuous? Before your time.
No, it's just before my time, Matt. I'm sorry.
So I used to spend and made a lot of money out of selling that and selling floppy disks, those, you know, little frisbees we used to use around our office. But I'm used to sell all that gear. And I was probably not ready to be an entrepreneur in those days, even though I sort of went down that path, and I had a bit of family support to go down that path. My father-in-law, who's since passed away, but bless him, was an entrepreneur in every moment of every day, you know, even when he passed away at sort of 88. And I think I you know, sort of followed a little bit in his footsteps and my own father's footsteps, who, you know, had an amazing story of starting Levi Jeans in Australia. A lot of people don't know that. He started that brand in this country all those years ago. It's a shame he never protected his IP, and he got pushed aside, and it kind of, you know, really gave him a bit of a kick in the head. But for my own entrepreneur journey, I got into selling computer accessories, and that didn't work for me in those days. It was during the first GFC. Interest rates were 22%. Can you believe that? Today they're, you know, next to nothing. But 22% with the interest rates, my average order value was $120. And so I was selling to corporates. Corporates did not want to pay their bill for $120, and it got stuck, pushed to the bottom of the pile. And of course, in those days, I was running all my customers were paying on an account. And so I became their bank at 22%. That killed me. And cash flow strangled me until I you know, literally lost everything. We lost our business, went into receivership. We lost our house. We lost everything. My wife and I had $500 in the bank. And we had our elder son, Jeremy, who's 27 now. He was 6 months old. And we had a Great Dane called Gus, who developed a heart disease, and it cost us $2,500 to have him operated on. And we loved that dog, and we had $500 in a bank. Now, there's a dilemma, a dichotomy sitting right there. What do we do with that? And we borrowed money from friends to get the dog sorted out. And sadly, the dog passed away, and onward our lives went. And you know, I left that business, went in to work for an English computer manufacturer called ICL, selling personal computers, which kind of the next step from selling computer accessories was selling PCs. I was in a company called ICL, which were predominantly a mainframe computer supplier competing against IBM and the like. And here I was selling personal computers for them, which was like unheard of. Personal computer was $7,000, especially in those days. And I was, you know, one of the first people to start doing that. They got bought out by Fujitsu. I went across to the big Japanese giant and looked after point of sale systems for them, and looked after some of Australia's biggest retailers with point of sale equipment, some supermarkets, got involved heavily with that and the automation of the checkout process. And one of my old colleagues from Fujitsu went to Apple. And he said to me, hey, you want to come across to Apple? We're looking for a really gun business development guy who can go and focus on our major account program at Apple. And I went, yep, out the door I went, straight into Apple. Knew nothing about Apple, but I read the book about John Sculley versus Steve Jobs and that whole era of you know, just creating a cult, you know, and I just fell in love with Steve Jobs and effectively went and worked for him. When I started at Apple, I was their major account executive. I looked after global accounts. I did that for 4 years. I took the likes of Telstra to Cupertino. We met Steve Jobs. We met Fred Anderson, Phil Schuller, marketing, head of marketing now, who you know, used to come and speak at our private client dinners that we'd organised. Took some pretty serious heavy hitters from Australia to Cupertino for briefings. We looked at the iMac before it came out. We looked at the iPhone before it came out. We met, you know, Johnny Ive, who came and hosted us at dinner. We went to his secret design studio and showed customers around. And you can't do that these days. It's like Fort Knox down there. And spent a bit of time sort of playing in that world and did that for 10 years. Eventually became Apple's manager of commercial markets for the southern region. So that was looking after everything that was revenue generating other than education, both higher ed and K-12. Other than education, I was looking after everything else across the southern region. So that's Apple centres, government, major accounts. And so looked after all of those commercial elements and did that for effectively 10 years until the day that the World Trade Centers got attacked in the US. I went to my job at Apple. It was a magnificent day in Melbourne. I remember it so clearly. Sitting at reception of Apple was the CEO and the CFO and our HR director. And the CEO happened to be my friend. We started off doing the same job together, and he climbed the ladder way quicker than I did. And he said to me, "Darren, do you know why I'm here?" And I said, "I have no idea. I'm guessing it's something to do with World Trade Center's got attacked, and we're a high-profile American organization. We were always having sort of, you know, security drills and bomb threats and all that. But, we're here to say, Darren, you know, Apple is restructuring, and your name's at the top of the list this time around." Now, I'd watched this happen for many years. Usually they pick the highest earners that weren't part of the management team, so to speak, and there was their turn to move on because Apple was doing it tough in those days. And I got effectively my marching orders. I got a nice check. I got paid out really well from Apple. Went down to St Kilda Marina, Mike, where my little fishing boat was stored, because my father-in-law said to me, who was really into boating, "If you buy a little boat for the family, I will pay for the storage at St Kilda Marina in one of those little racks where the forklift pulls it in and out of the water. And I'll use it during the day while you're at work." And I thought, you know what? What a great idea. I would have done that anyway, let him use the boat, but he wanted to pay for storage. So I said yes. And I had my little fishing boat at St Kilda Marina. I went down there and potted around, had a beer and contemplated my life and tried to pick up the pieces, because I was gutted, mate. I was absolutely gutted. I look back at that now, which is 20-odd years ago, and think they did me an absolute favour. I was burnt out badly, and I didn't see it. You know, I was on a treadmill running, and Cupertino would tell Australia as a small geography, we need more numbers, we need more volume, and Apple was, you know, getting smashed by Microsoft in those days. And someone from head office would just turn the treadmill up, and I would just keep running. And I could not see the trees going past, the beautiful view, all those wonderful experiences, because I was just running for my life. And Apple did me a favour by restructuring and not giving me a seat at the table, so to speak. And I went to St Kilda Marina, played with my boat. And my wife said to me, my wife's an absolute ripper. She just gets to see things from such a wonderful perspective. She says, "Well, you know, you love boating so much." And I've been boating at this stage for probably, well, I'd had boats before my father and all says we keep it at St Kilda Marina. So I'd been boating since I was 18. And water skiing was my thing, and fishing and all that sort of stuff, hanging with mates and enjoying life. And my wife said to me, "You got a couple of days free a month," because, you know, I was setting up this little consultancy business, really consulting back to my old Apple channel, which suited me at the time because I hadn't worked out what I wanted to do. She said, "You got a couple of days free a month. Why don't you just go down to the boat house at the marina at St Kilda and say to the guy there or the person that runs that business that you're good at marketing and you love boating and you're really passionate and you've got plenty of energy. Why don't you go there and see if he'll hire you free? You don't have to take any money for it. Just do it for yourself. Do something you love and do something that connects you and you know, let's get your mojo sorted out." And I went, "Oh, no, he's not going to want to hire me. Why would he want to do that? And, you know, you're why it wasn't going to happen came into my mind. But I followed her advice, went there, had a conversation with him, and our conversation kept flowing over the course of 3 or 4 months, and I bought his business with a friend of mine. He said, "I've fallen in love with an Italian girl. Actually, just want to sell my business, to be perfectly honest. That's why I'm hiring you as a free consultant. Why don't you just buy my business?" I knew nothing about selling boats, nothing about marketing boats, nothing about surfing boats, knew nothing, any of that. I just was a boat owner and knew my ability as a marketer and the ability to connect with people, and thought, yeah, I could do this. This is a ripping idea. And we thought, you know what, it's really not a lot of money. The hurt money wasn't mega. And we bought this business and we thought, we'll see how it goes and let's just see, worst come to worst. We closed the doors in a year. We've had a bit of fun playing around with boats and, you know, we haven't lost a fortune in doing that. And 15 years later, can you believe it? 15 years later, we sold our business. So that's my story.
Darren, there's so much gold in there. I can't wait to dig into a bunch of different things. You know, one of the questions that I love to ask people, I love to ask myself this question, which is, you know, what would I do if I lost everything tomorrow? You know, and How would I emotionally respond to that? What would I do to rebuild? You know, what would others do to rebuild? And it's always a nice hypothetical, but, you know, you really experience that when, you know, you said you were down to your last $500 and you'd lost everything. You had your son who was 6 months old. Like, walk us through that experience. What was that like? Because I'm sure within that there was so many dichotomies that you were wrestling with.
Yeah. My tone now has completely changed from a minute or two ago when I was telling you how, you know, my career had evolved, and that's purely because it brings up so many emotions, and you know, I got shivers up my spine now having to go back and relive that time. I think the first thing, you can't plan for that. You know, you can't say tomorrow I'm going to lose everything, and so therefore the next day I'm going to do this. It's just survival, and survival's on so many different levels. You know, my wife and I, we've been married now for, so to think about this, I can't take my wedding ring off because it's got the date behind it, and I can't take it off. But we've been married for 34 years. So we're talking now a relationship that we have that she knows what I'm thinking and I know how she's thinking, and we work really well together by being able to just look at the cards that we've been dealt and prioritize what it is we need to move forward with together. And so to answer your question, it's about understanding what's important and what isn't, and trying to plan our way through it. You know, we lost our house that we'd sort of bought, you know, a few years prior to this. And, you know, we had a big mortgage with the bank. The bank took over the house. We had to sell the house and for a shitty price, because that's, you know, all the bank wanted, were happy to take, because they just wanted their dough, and they knew that we were secured creditors, and, you know, and it was just a horrible time. We weren't in control of any of that. And we just had to go along with the way it was and try and work out what the best alternative is. And one of the things we did was we had to start budgeting, and we had to start budgeting for what it was we were spending our money on. And we used to have little bags. You know, you get these little zip-top bags from the bank when you get change. You know what I'm talking about? And we used to put little notes inside those bags. So our supermarket money was $50 or whatever it was for the week. We'd have $50 sitting in that bag because that's all we had to spend. And then we broke down all of our expenses and had little bags with cash, because we didn't use credit cards in those days. We didn't want to have the debt of a credit card, and probably with bad credit, I don't even know whether I could have applied for one. So we just had to budget to the very last cent how we were going to spend our money. And it meant prioritizing, working out what was important, and not bitching about it, because fuck, that was it. That was our reality. We couldn't change it. And just kept doing the, you know, being good people, kept on being positive, kept on trying to look for opportunities, for trying to just change our perspective of how we see things, and see positive and see good and see happy, and just surround ourselves with that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, mate. And this is the thing, I think it's all well and good to say these things, you know, in theory, or, you know, thinking about it, but then to actually do that when you're really up against the wall, you know, obviously my hat goes off to you, right? And I'm sure anyone listening is, I'm sure there's been plenty of people listening who have experienced similar things in their own journey. And, you know, I'm a young fella in the world, and I've been pretty fortunate. I haven't had, you know, too many experiences where I've been that up against the wall. And so, like, when you were really positive and you kind of found those ways to just move through it, did it come naturally to you, or did it something that you had to really work hard to do together with you and your wife?
I live my life pretty well, even now, you know, 30-odd years ahead. I live my life, and I'm, you know, a really optimistic person from a commercial perspective. I am incredibly resilient, and I find I'm on a bit of an emotional roller coaster. And so I go through these really pumped up, high, you know, high activity stages. And then I kind of hit the wall, and I kind of I don't fall into a heap, but I have those down moments. And you've got to ride those down moments. I look back now, hindsight's a wonderful thing. I look back at the down moments and realize that to have such great highs, you need to have the lows, because that's just how it works. And you just need to keep your focus when you're in one of those down moments. You need to keep your focus on, A, the things that you do really well. So it's not like when you have a GFC and you're working through a business rule. I didn't create that. So I just need to focus on the things that I do well, because those things never change, and I know customers love them. And keeping customers happy is the only thing you need, is the critical component of any business. Understand your customers, keep them happy, and if you can keep doing that, then happy days. So I just need to ride through those down times. And when I'm in those down times, I look for things like, the positive things that I'm doing well. What are my strengths? My wife encouraged me to keep a little book, which I've got in my desk right now, and I know you can't see it, but she gave me a book for my birthday called Three Little Things. And she just wanted me to write down during some really tough times, three things that were positive about each day. And I still do that. I reflect back on it. And I've got the book here at my desk, and I show my clients, and I talk to my clients about that in their businesses. But those little things just help me get my head right, because, as sure as the tide's going to go in and out tomorrow, when you're down, you're going to have an up moment, and you can ride it, and away you go. So that's how it works for me.
Mate, what an amazing wife you've got, and an amazing human being she's got as well. And I can't wait to ask you some more questions about family life and how you navigate that with business, because I know you've got some really kind of cool ways that you bring it all together in terms of the connection and all that kind of thing. For someone who you are so optimistic, right? It's something that I think a lot of people would notice about you when they meet you, is you're a super positive, optimistic guy, but it's nice to know that you experience that roller coaster as well. Like, we all do, I suppose. And I guess it's the entrepreneur curse. It's the entrepreneur blessing and curse that, it's just the nature of the beast. It's always such a roller coaster. Do you ever sit there and go, God, I'm just sick of the roller coaster? Or do you really do you love it?
I would be lying to you, and anybody would be lying to you that says sometimes they just get sick of the roller coaster, because I do. I think as entrepreneurs we do. There's been plenty of times in my career that I've thought, what the F am I doing? This is just ridiculous. There must be other things to do that are easier, that are whatever. It's always, as I said before, it's always, greener on the other side. They're catching more fish on the other side of the river, so I should be fishing on that side, not the side I'm on. Yeah, always. And I just keep focused on the goal. That's if as entrepreneurs we're not like that, then we would be working behind the counter in some retail or organization, not being the entrepreneur that I am. And part of that acceptance of that is that I'm going to cop, I'm going to come up against a brick wall a shitload of times. Cards aren't going to fall the way they're I have them planned. All that stuff's going to happen. I go, now, well, bring it on. That's just what you deal with. If you don't want that, that's fine. Go and do something else for a living.
Yeah. Dude, it's so good to hear that come out of someone else's mouth. I think for anyone listening that feels that way, I know I've said that same thing to myself all the time. It's like, what the? It's just, it's easy, I think, to look at people, in different businesses or jobs or whatever, and you go, fuck, that just seems easy, like they're just, the money flows and they don't seem to work too hard and whatever else. We all have times where that, things work right. But I think in business, more often than not, it feels like it doesn't.
One little really interesting thing that you've just touched on, perception isn't always reality, and don't believe everything everybody else tells you. Because when they tell you, oh, this is fantastic, this is great, this is, guaranteed you, as long as my ass points to the ground, they've had those roller coasters and they will tomorrow, because it's just how it works. There's no one out there that's had smooth run and everything's rosy and life's great. No, doesn't work like that.
Wisdom. Good, really good wisdom. Hey, Darren, I knew I was going to enjoy this conversation. I'm selfishly lapping up all your years of experience, so thank you. Hey, you know, maybe now's a good time to chat about that, and maybe because you've been on an interesting or a unique transition, right? Going from running a boat sales business very successfully and selling it a couple of years ago, right? Now?
Yeah, 2 years.
Yeah. And, you know, it was seven-figure business. So, you know, we'll call it a successful exit. And now you've transitioned into business coaching and coaching and helping other business owners to learn from all your years of experience. Tell us, what was that transition? What's that transition been like for you?
Well, it's really fresh in my mind. Look, I sort of struggled at the beginning. So once I sold the boat sales business, and part of one of the income streams we developed in the boat sales business was the boat guy, the person I created, the expert in the marine industry. I was consulting to other marine businesses. And one of the consultancy contracts we had was for me to assist in the creation and development and building of a new marina and a residential development here in Melbourne. And I'd worked on that, and towards within the last sort of year of us selling our business, I was working on that actually full time while I was still doing the boat sales business. And, you know, had a good team of people around me that enabled me to do that. So once we sold our boat sales business, I literally walked out of St Kilda and I walked into my new office down there at Wyndham Harbour and had a full-time consultancy role with them to run their marina and manage the whole process. So I didn't have a break in between positions. And on the day my contract signed for our boat sales business, my father-in-law passed away, and that was a fairly emotional time for the whole family. But it was interesting that I didn't have a break. I went straight out of St Kilda one day, straight into the new role, no transition. It was just all guns blazing. At the same momentum that I'd been doing St Kilda, I went into this new place. I did that for 2 years. And in September last year, the shareholders decided that my job had been done, and we'd sort of parted our ways. And I sort of struggled for a bit. So really, end of September last year, I was out on the market looking for what my next chapter was going to be. And I applied, and I thought, you know what, I'll just go and be a CEO or a general manager of an organization, and I'll apply for some jobs on Seek. I've got, you know, great experience and wonderful achievements in my life, and I'm a, you know, incredibly smart business person. And I could not find a job. It absolutely did my head in, and I wasn't even getting interviews with things that I'd applied for on frickin' Seek and LinkedIn and all that sort of stuff. And I actually found that to be a really, really hard and difficult time, and probably a fairly significant low in my life if I look back at it now. And, you know, I felt like my confidence had been shattered. My competency was crap. No one wanted to hire me or get me in, interview me for a position because for whatever reason is, and they often didn't give me reasons why I didn't get an interview. And so, of course, my mind's ticking over going, oh, I'm not this, I'm not that. It's all about me being not the right person. And I listened to a really good piece of advice I heard from Eddie McGuire, who was talking on a podcast. And he said, you know what, during times like that, it's not about your competency that's wrong. Your competency is absolutely the same as it was 2 months ago. It's about your confidence, and your confidence is getting a beating. And I just grabbed onto that, and that resonated to me to make really good sense. It wasn't my competency, it was my confidence. Now, Darren, understand the differences. I was really hard on myself. Understand the differences. It's not about me. It's just about that this, I'm not applying for the right positions. I'm not pitching properly. I'm not putting myself in the right frame of right light to be accepted for that role. Maybe the role's just the universe was sorting me out, and those roles were never right for me. And so I moved down that path, but I found that really difficult. And then I was talking with Andrew Griffiths one night, having a beer on his balcony, looking at the sunset over Melbourne, and, you know, gazing into my navel, feeling really, really low. It was a really tough time. He said, Darren, what are you looking for these jobs for? This is just madness. Why don't you go out there and set up your own business? And you know what you've been really good at? You've been really good at making yourself accountable. Why don't you go out there and teach people, work with people to get stuff done, become an accountability coach? And I thought about it, and I thought, you need 24 hours to marinate on that. Went home, threw it over with the wife and talked about the, you know, ups and downs and pros and cons. And next day I was full gun, all guns blazing, and haven't looked back since. You know, registered a business name, you know, started setting up websites, just building client connections, and off it's gone at a million miles an hour. So I look back at those 6 months, and we talked before about that sort of roller coaster. I look back at those 6 months. I had 6 months off, which I've never had before in my working life. It was off during Melbourne's peak summer, which to me in the marine industry for the last 20 years has been madness. You know, it's the season where you make your money. And I had an opportunity to do what I've always done and that and always wanted to do, and that is sit back and look at Christmas from a distance, not being in the workforce, watching everybody run around like mad ants trying to get stuff done before the 24th of December. And I had an opportunity to do that, and I kind of didn't really grasp it very well because I was my mind was, I need a job, I need a job, I need a job. I just didn't really embrace it the way I should have. And looking back at it, I had 6 months off, which is what it was. And in that 4 months, I had some, you know, great times where I embraced it and was really healing for me, started to replenish my energy bank. But there are times where I just fought it all the way and didn't want to be doing nothing. I wanted to be active because that's just who I am.
You know, Darren, God, man, I feel so much of what you've just shared, and you know, I'm sure people listening would feel the same way. But yeah, you know, I've just come off the back of a 6 month sabbatical as well, and you know, it's hard to when you're the type A kind of personality and ambitious and driven. And I don't know, I'll just sort of share my experiences. Like, you know, my certainly when you put a lot of validation in your work, you know, it's like I validate myself based on achieving things in the world. And when I'm sitting back and just not achieving something for a period of time, I feel really uncomfortable. And so I could really resonate with what you shared. And yeah, like what's your take on that? You know, if you were to go back 6 months ago and give yourself advice again, what would you say to yourself?
Relax, Max. You need to live. You need to live by the advice that you give out, and that is, you know, it's going to come good. You know, there's a happy ending to this story. So use this opportunity to relax, chill, embrace it, and you know, it's a nice day outside. Instead of looking at Seek, go and have a surf. Go and do something that makes you happy, because it's all going to work out. It always does. But I just didn't have that confidence that I talked about earlier on to believe that. So if I look back now, I'd be whacking myself over the head going, could have done something better with that 6 months or the 4 months than you actually did, Darren. But, you know, that's shit happens.
That's the way the cookie crumbles. Given that experience, do you think about, you know, planning more of that downtime, you know, kind of into moving forward as like just a non-negotiable part of how you run your week, your month, your year?
Yeah. It's interesting because I'm now – when I was in the marine industry, I used to have to work Saturdays or Sundays because that's, you know, typically peak times and public holidays and all that sort of stuff. Now I'm not in that sort of tourism side of things because marine is very much like a tourist attraction. Because I'm not in that, I can choose to work when it suits me. And we're very, very fortunate. We have a house down the beach here in Melbourne, desk down near Torquay at a place called Ocean Grove. And we can go down there whenever, you know, whatever weekend we like and whatever long weekend we like. And if we want to take days off, we can do that. And so I've really embraced that now. And so that time I go down there is absolutely precious. And I don't have security guards ringing me going, oh, there's some people mucking up at the marina or some boat's sinking or, you know, all that stuff that went on. I don't have that anymore. And that's kind of a relief. You know, my phone doesn't ring as much as it used to, and that's bloody great.
You know, given the theme of this podcast is all about exploring the dichotomies that we experience in life and you know, some of the ways we get to that conversation is always can be a bit more subtle than others. But, you know, if I was to ask you really directly, when I say that word dichotomy, what does it mean to you? What's your relationship with that word and where have you experienced the greatest dichotomies in your life and in business?
Yeah. It's really, to me, it's sort of dichotomy. It's in Darren language, Darren world, that means like, you know, you're faced with a couple of choices. And, you know, I sort of see that as being a bit of a fork in the road. And I've really tried to learn how to choose the right fork in the road. And so if I kind of look back at what I've learned in you know, my past business life, particularly when you know, we lost the business and we lost the house and did all that sort of, and all that was a horrible time, I'm now a, and what I was never really good at in those days was things like cash flow, things like budgeting. And now I'm really freaking good at it. So right now I don't make a decision in my business unless I financially model it. And I suggest that to a number of my clients that, you know, you want to run a workshop for people, you want to run a marketing event, you want to run some marketing, you want to do whatever. Have you looked at, you know, you're at a fork in the road now. Have you looked at what it needs? How many tickets do you need to have sold for it to break even? You want to get that product out to market. What is the volume of that product you need to break even? What is that point where you can decide whether it's a go or no go? And that, to me, is that sort of decision that people need to make, and they need to make it very clearly and very carefully, because it can determine their future. They're at that fork in the road that I saw myself in so many years ago. And so I kind of learn by my mistakes, learn, you know, from hindsight as to what I think I should do moving forward. So does that explain, does that answer your question how I address a dichotomy?
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that came to mind was you said when you were working at Apple for 10 years and they just kept turning up the treadmill and you had to keep running, right? And you just kept running harder and harder and harder. But, you know, at the time, perhaps, you know, that presented a fork in the road that you know, kind of Apple made the choice for you, right? But had you have sort of identified that dichotomy a little bit earlier, maybe you would have made a different decision.
Totally. But sometimes, you know, I think for people to make, or for me certainly, to make that decision, and I go back to that fork in the road, I actually see the fork in the road. You know, I'm looking now, trying to describe this to you, I see a dark road in my mind, and I see two choices, really clear choices. Am I going left or am I going right? And I believe you need to be able to slow that decision down so you're not hitting that fork at a million miles an hour. And if you're hitting it at a million miles an hour, sometimes you don't have the choice or the ability to correct your, you know, take the right turn. So I'm trying to slow that decision down to be able to understand what each of those two forks are as I start to approach it.
It's a great way to think about it, actually. It's like the speed and the velocity at which you approach the fork on the road is probably like directly inversely proportional to your ability to make a good decision, right?
Correct. Absolutely. Now, when Apple's turning up that treadmill, I wasn't able to slow it down. I wasn't able to look around. I didn't even know that I needed to slow it down or look around. So you need to be aware of that circumstance so you know what action to take. And you see the fork in the road, I slow things down, I can start analyzing the two choices in my head. At Apple, I didn't see anything off that treadmill. Mate, I'm just freaking running and running and running, and I'm looking down because I'm trying to, you know, stay balanced on the treadmill. So unless you're actually aware of it, how do you know? You're just going to keep, as entrepreneurs, we're all driven. We just keep driving. You keep going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe one of the dichotomies I'm curious to explore with you is around family life and business life. How have they meshed together for you over the years?
I've learned by my mistakes. they've meshed together. You know, when I was at Apple, I used to travel a huge amount, particularly to Cupertino, which the head office was. So, you know, I used to go to Cupertino for, you know, 3 days. Imagine that, traveling, you know, Melbourne, Sydney, Los Angeles, Los Angeles, San Francisco, because there was no direct flight from Sydney to, or from Melbourne to San Francisco. And so you travel there, you try to acclimatize, you meet clients, so you're go, 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 and then you're flying home. I had this real issue with my kids because they were young in those days, really young. And they used to sleep with a photo of me under their pillow because they sometimes could remember what Dad looked like because I traveled that much. And that's, you know, that really haunts me that I, when the kids are so impressionable and so young, that we needed to find a way for that to work. And so it's always been an issue, not an issue, it's always been a thing in our family of even now, you know, I've got one son who's 26 and the other one, the other son who's 29, of being able to find out what everybody's needs are and making it work for them. And I think that's probably, you know, why we've lasted so long. And, it's, you know, it's a fantastic life we lead. It's not always beer and skittle. You know, it's not always wonderful. It's a roller coaster. We have to work at it. We have to do all those important things. But it's a matter of understanding your people's perspectives and what makes them tick and trying to be the best you can to tick their boxes.
Yeah. You know, years ago, you probably don't remember this, but we were at a KPI event and we were talking about life and business as we do. And you shared with me something that you did with your wife on a regular basis. It was kind of one of your little relationship best practices, I suppose. And I'm curious to ask you, do you remember what you shared with me?
I think, I hope we're talking about the same thing. I buy her flowers every week.
Tell us about that.
Was that correct?
That was it.
Ah, how good's that? Phew, got shivers then, wondering whether. Yeah, so I know that. So when we have our weekends in Melbourne and we're not down the beach, I know that she loves flowers. I know freesias are her thing, and in season I'll buy her freesias and ornamental lilies works as well, and you know, early cheer and daffodils and all those sort of flowers that we're about to start coming into work really well. So I have a florist and I zip in there and say good day and give him my $20 and $15 or whatever. Money wasn't the issue, but she loves them, and if it makes her happy, then why not?
Yeah, man, I love it. I can't tell you how many people I've told that story. You probably don't know, but I've shared that story a lot since you first shared it with me, and you know, I really admired just you know, how disciplined you were towards creating a really, you know, amazing relationship. And, you know, I think often as business owners, what I've observed over the years is that we put so much effort and energy into trying to build great systems and best practices and structure around running our business, but often we're not really taught how to build great structure around relationships and family. I think this is a really great, simple example. What kind of other things have you built into maybe family life that's helped you, you know, create an extraordinary family life as much as a great business life?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that I've always wrestled with, and I actually, looking at what you've done in the last 6 months on your sabbatical, I really admire that how you've picked up your roots from Australia and you've gone to a different country and you did some travelling on the way. I've never done that in my life. I'm born and raised in Melbourne and have always been here, as has my wife. And I really admire that you could just, I don't even contemplate how you could do that, because in my life, where we are very family orientated, we each Friday night we rotate, whether one Friday night's my family, this weekend, this Friday night, we're all going to my sister's place, we're going to have pizzas for dinner and you know, we'll take the piss out of each other and then we'll all go. Next Friday night I'll go to my wife's family and do that. So, and then we get a chance to see our boys because, you know, they all both live out of home. They try and come for dinner once a week. Yeah, it's just also, it's what we kind of what we do. And I really admire you for stepping outside of what I would do and go and live in another country and set up a business in another country. You know, it's different to how I would do it, but it's great. I can get pleasure and enjoyment out of watching your life unfold on Facebook.
That's really kind, Azza, and thank you. It's an interesting journey. It's a lot. I kind of liked the idea of packing up and going and living in another country at some point in my life, because I like the idea of that adventure. And I was, you know, fortunate in a place where I, you know, I was sort of single at the time and could do that. And didn't have any major obligations back at home. So, but nonetheless, it's, you know, definitely scary as fuck at sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, I totally get that.
Because you're, you know, not only are you in a whole new place and trying to, you know, mix and mingle and friends and network and all that kind of thing, but definitely starting a business in a new country, even though, you know, I'm fortunate with Dents well-established all over the world other than Canada. But, you know, nonetheless, it takes some time to get that up and running and build relationships. And, you know, talking about some of the fears that you kind of talked about earlier of, you know, being up against the wall, you know, it's sort of, I can definitely relate to some of that to a degree, just setting up in a new country. So maybe on that note, when have you felt most afraid in your business or your life, or maybe today, what, like, given all your experience, does anything still scare you?
Yeah, sure does. You know, I'm very much a sales-focused individual. I absolutely understand intimately. If you don't make sales, you can't survive. You've got to build your income. You've got to have regular income. You know, your income needs to be more than your expenses. Otherwise, it's all going to fall apart. And so I'm a sales guy. I'm effectively out. I've, you know, pitched to clients and prospective organisations. I've given them proposals and put my best foot forward. I'm waiting on decisions. And those decisions, I'm scared about that. You know, if I don't get the deals, I'll find the next prospect. But I'm still focused on getting those deals across the line. And if I don't get them across the line, I'm sort of shitting myself until I do. Human nature. And I get the, and then they give me the confirmation and I clench the fist and hang up the phone and go, yeah, and, you know, celebrate the victory and talk about it tonight with my wife and we'll talk about the positive components out of it and celebrate the little victories. Every little victory we have, we try and celebrate. And then tomorrow I'm up on the plate again, pitching to the new person. And if the people today I'm waiting on a decision on tell me, no, thank you, it's not going to work, for whatever their reasons are, I'm going to be pissed off and I'm going to think, fuck, what could I have done better? And I'll try and review of, you know, and try and review of what I've done to try and improve my level of success next time. But there will be a next time. I will be up on the plate and the next person will, you know, that one no is going to bring me closer to their next yes.
Yeah, it's interesting. Of all the experience you've had in business and you've built a brand and you've, you know, applied the principles of becoming a visible leader within your industry as a key person of influence through our accelerators. And so you've kind of done all the business best practices that are out there to really scale a business. And despite all that, would you say that, you know, kind of even with all that stuff in place, there's no running away from the fact that the heart of what makes a business tick over is sitting down and having sales conversations with people? What's your experience on that?
100% correct, Mike. You have to have a sales conversation with people. If you don't want to get out there and sell your product, promote your product, as I said before, you need to do something for someone to give you money. And you give you money, build your income. So unless you actually do that and put yourself in the best position, then pick another industry. Go do something else. You just have to. And if you find it hard to have sales conversations, you've got to learn how to do it. You've just got to embrace it. You've got to embrace the pain because without them, you will die. Your business will die. Can't survive. You're it. You're the entrepreneur in the driver's seat. And if you can't go out there and have sales conversations with people, well, wow. How are you going to get your message out?
What would you say is the most important skill anyone could learn?
Listening. Listening, listening, listening. Listening to what someone's talking about and being able to really understand where they're coming from. And I think when you do that from a sales perspective, you get to understand what perhaps their objectives are. You get to understand what some of their reasons why they can't, reasons, you know, the negative stuff, the objections in a sales conversation. And if you can turn those objections around and answer those questions that perhaps the customer has a perception that's different from the reality. Perhaps they missed a point, haven't looked at a perspective the right way. But if you get to understand that, you can turn that around. Because as I said right at the beginning of this conversation, it's all about making customers happy. You understand their problems. You can deliver solutions to them. You can charge them for it and the world turns around. So listening, my friend.
Would you say, in your experience of working with a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs, what percentage of people would you say are really good listeners?
Small. People think they're listening. You know, they listen and then they hear what they want to hear. And that's not really listening because they're not hearing what they should hear, but they're hearing what they want to hear and then they're putting their spin on it. And they thought someone said this. I don't think a big percentage of them do.
How do you teach that? How do you learn that?
Well, you know, one of the important parts about listening is to be able to, you know, the old-fashioned way of writing notes on a bit of paper works because that, you know, the actual act of writing on a piece of paper means that you're taking what you've just heard and you're putting it down, you're processing it internally. It's not like I'm sitting there touching on a screen or an iPad or, with a stylus in my hand and I'm making notes on my computer while someone's talking. I don't reckon you learn as much, and I'm thinking there's plenty of studies out there to suggest that the best way to actually absorb something and take it in is if you write it down on a piece of paper. And one of the tips are have a piece of paper next to you. I've got a piece of paper and a pad right next to me now. I'm having this conversation with you and I've made a few little bullet points of notes, things that I want to talk about, things that you raised, and I can go back to them and you know, it keeps me present.
Yeah, I do that a lot too. Even just in this conversation, I've been jotting away little notes and little words and things, but I think particularly in business, it's super valuable to be able to do that.
Just a pen and paper, that's all it is. Works way better than the world's most expensive, fanciest, quickest, fastest, prettiest, smallest gadget device.
You don't need a $2,000 iPad to write down notes on a piece of paper.
Nope.
When you are really, tuning in and listening to someone in any situation, right? And let's say, Darren, that you realize you might need to have a difficult conversation with someone. How do you approach having difficult conversations with people?
Sometimes not as well as I should. So difficult conversations need to be had, and you can try and avoid them. You can see if it improves. You can wait. You can procrastinate. But the only thing that's going to work is if you go and fight it head on and have that conversation as is. And my advice to anybody having those conversations is we are all people. We are all emotional people. We all take, some people take things on personally, some people don't, but we are all people. And it's really important to have empathy because it's shit being on the other side of that table, being told that after 10 years at Apple that there's no place for you moving forward. That's shit. And so you just need to have that. It's business. It's not about personalities. It's not about whether I like that person or I don't like that person. This is purely business. And you just need to have that conversation as quickly as possible so everybody can move on.
Yeah, good timeless wisdom.
Mm.
And Darren, if I could ask you, and this may or may not be a bit of a sidewinder for you, but what's the difficult conversation that you've needed to have with yourself that you've been avoiding?
It's a sidewinder, all right. I needed to have that difficult conversation with myself not that long ago when I went through that point of, over Christmas holidays, I kept on looking on frickin' Seek and LinkedIn for a bloody job, and that was sucking my mojo away. And I needed to accept the fact that is a hard task to find as a 57-year-old guy, 56 at the time, as a 56-year-old guy, there is a shitload of people out there who don't see the value that you bring. They just see, me and they don't know me. And I needed to have conversations with people that know me, that know what it is that I am, what it is that I deliver, that my resume on a boring bit of fucking paper doesn't jump out and tell people. And I thought I wrote a great, I was told that I'd written a engaging, great resume. Well, you know what? Wasn't for a lot of people. And just getting those rejections, mate, it sucked my mojo out. It's like someone pulled the plug out of my ass and all the good stuff went. And all I was left was a shell. And that shell was feeling pretty sorry for itself. And so my hard conversation with myself was, you know what? Stop doing this. It's not making me, it's not the place in which I thrive, which I float to the surface. This is not the environment that is how I best work. So remove yourself from that environment. So as soon as I stopped doing stuff on Seek and LinkedIn, I was feeling better for myself. A lot better for myself. Play to your strengths. Those strengths weren't in LinkedIn and Seek.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You know, you took the words out of my mouth, which was it seems like the lesson and the learning in that was really like play your strengths. And it's almost like and I've had this experience myself, you know, I've done plenty of psychometric profiles over the years and I've really tried at times to resist my weaknesses and like resist the things that they've shown me, which really I like know about myself, which are not my strengths, I'm not good at. But my ego wants to be good at them. You know, my ego says, you know, I should be able to do this, right? And it's like, and so I'll try and improve upon it or chip away at the edges of that. And it always ends in just not disaster, but just, you know, no progress, right? And yeah, man, that's such a good, thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate it. I think listeners will too. That's just such a great lesson. That's why I wanted to ask the question, you know, Darren, it's in this life experience that there is just such good lessons for anyone, but particularly I think for entrepreneurs, because I would imagine that any entrepreneur goes through a bunch of transitions in their life. You know, I think especially as you get to your age, you know, you lead a bunch of different careers, and each of those transitions must be really 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 tough. So I just really appreciate you sharing such good wisdom.
My pleasure, my friend. It's because you're asking me really good questions. you're prizing it out. I could feel that sidewinder you just asked me. I was struggling to open that can because I didn't want to open that can.
Yeah.
Going back to, you know, an unpleasant time. But good on you for asking good questions and making it come to the surface.
And mate, thank you. And I want to be respectful of time because I know that we've got to jet off soon. And so, there's a couple of final questions, if I could, and then we'll wrap up. You mentioned before you've turned 57, and we were talking off air about kind of getting to that stage in your life. And you know, I think we've covered a kind of a lot of things around that. But one of the things you mentioned off air was this idea of like, and you've mentioned it a few times in the show, is playing the cards that you've been dealt. Can you talk us through that philosophy and maybe just sort of why that's so important for you?
You know, I use that expression a lot in my life. I look back at it as a kid. You know, I was really as a school kid, I was short. I didn't grow like the other kids in my class until I grew later, but I just didn't grow at the same time they did, so I was different. I was the only Jewish kid in my primary school. And man, I used to get the shit beaten out of me. Kids used to wait for me, in lots of empty paddocks in where we lived. And on my way home from school, these kids would wait for me in the paddock and ambush me and literally beat the shit out of me. And I'd go home in a teared up mess. And I've just learnt to, you know, my cards weren't that I was as tall as everybody else or as I was intimidating or I was Christian or Catholic or Anglican or Presbyterian like the other kids in the school. I had to be the only, me and my sisters were the only Jewish kids in the school. And, you know, I just learned to accept that. I learned that that wasn't going to define me. I was just going to keep going. And I was going to, you know, just those were the cards. Just play the hand you got and make the best of the situation, because I can't wiggle my nose and be extra 2 feet tall, and it is what it is. So just accept it. Don't fight it, and go and build your strategy or build your whatever around your armor around that. And, you know, having resilience and having persistence and having, you know, the ability to be really good at thinking on my feet, that is what those beatings as a kid at school made. And I'm pretty bloody happy with that, because I left school, as you know, I told you I got kicked out of school and repeated form four or year 10. I don't have any degrees. I never went to university, and I probably would have liked to have gone to university and studied something. But you know what? I've got an MBA of life, and I'm fucking happy I've got it, and I'm really happy who I am. And, you know, I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just, you know, playing the cards that I've got were dealt to me and making the best hand I can for those people around me that I want to share that with.
Look, Darren, I'll say that I think you are an inspiration to me and to so many people in how you approach business and life. And, you know, I have a community of about 1,200 six to seven figure revenue entrepreneurs in Australia, business owners who've been around the block, they've had plenty of experience. You know, you are by far and away one of the most respected and revered members of that community for your experience in business, what you've achieved, you know, your kind of just go get it attitude. And so mate, I want to salute you, and I want to say thank you so much for taking the time to share so openly on this show. I think I've connected with you so much more. I feel like I know you 100 times better. I'm sure everyone listening feels that way as well. And so if I could ask you, just to for those who are curious, tell us a little bit more about what you're up to now with what you're doing as a coach, and if people want to connect with you to maybe see whether or not you might be the right person to help them get to the next stage of their journey, where should they go?
Yeah, mate. Look, thank you very much, Mike. Thank you for inviting me to be part of what I think is a really freaking cool podcast, and love everything that you do, and feel like we're sharing our journeys together, and I really appreciate our connection that we've had over so many years. So what I'm doing now is I'm an accountability coach and a business advisor. I work with entrepreneurial business owners and their teams to ensure full accountability. So that means people can and the entrepreneurs can meet their obligations and promises and the commitments that they've made to other people, and, of course, those commitments to themselves. So I'm working and rolling up my sleeves with them and making sure they can get stuff done, because I realise that, you know, all that activity that I did in my business with that energy and started pumping out good things, positive projects, positive activities, positive actions, really made a big difference to my business. And so I'm doing that with other entrepreneurial business owners. So my website is tickthoseboxes.com.au. Love that name, Tick Those Boxes, because let's face it, everybody's got lots of boxes they want to tick, lots of things they wanted to do on their to-do list and their must-do list and their like-to and those hairy, audacious goals. And, you know, we go to work every day with the right frame of mind as entrepreneurs, and we're all really positive. We get to work and we've got a list of things we want to get through today, and then, of course, something pops up, as it will, as it always does, that needs attention immediately. And, of course, that goes to the top of the list, and that thing that's been patiently waiting there on the bottom of the list drops off and never returns. And you just need to get through all those things to make a real impact in your business. And I'm very happy to share my toolbox, my skill set, my kit bag with those that want to work together with me to create a really nice environment to work in and get some of your time back again. You know, working like a dog is not good. You need to have a balance. You know, we all love what we do, but you can't do that 7 days a week. Your family are going to hate you. You made it, if you're lucky enough to have a family after all that. You need to get a balance in your life. And hopefully getting through your to-do list with my assistance can mean you can get a bit more time up your sleeve and reconnect with those that are important if that's what you want to do, or walk the dog if you don't want to connect with others, or just but have the choice. I'll give you the time.
you have the choice to do whatever it is that you want to do.
Awesome. Hey, you know, for anyone listening, I'd highly recommend if you're looking for someone to keep you accountable to get shit done, but not only get shit done, to actually get some really amazing kind of bespoke advice and guidance for your business from someone who's walked the path before, then Darren is an amazing human to connect with and an amazing leader to connect with. So, Daz, thank you. And, mate, one final question. In the words of Darren Finkelstein, what's the purpose or meaning of life?
Jeez, I'm not prepared for that one. Purpose or meaning of life. Look, you know what? For me, it's about creating and giving myself choices and having options to do the things that I and those around me that are important want to do. I want to be able to choose what my future and destiny is. I don't want to have someone else choose that for me.
Awesome. Hey, brilliant words. Darren, once again, mate, thank you. Awesome to have you on the show.
You're my absolute pleasure, mate, and thank you for sharing your time with me. And hopefully I've given everybody a little bit of an understanding of what makes me tick.
Hey, so thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. As you know, I just love talking life, business, philosophy with like-minded souls who think deeply about the world, their business, and how to live a good life. I'll be releasing episodes on this podcast as regularly as possible, at least twice a week for the foreseeable future. So stay tuned for the next episode. And if you want to join a community of ambitious and driven entrepreneurs, mavericks, change makers, those kind of people, then head to my website, www.mikejamesreed.com. And that's Reed spelled R-E-I-D. You'll find a whole bunch of resources to be able to connect with me and a community of entrepreneurs that are up to something in the world. Until next time, thanks so much for listening. Oh, and one final request. If you've enjoyed this show, please give it an honest rating and review on iTunes or any other way that you listen to the podcast. I'd really appreciate it. It just helps the show get found and out to more people's ears who will hopefully love it as much as you do. Thanks so much again, and much love from me.